Welcome to the Music Therapy Roundtable, Episode 7. We are your hosts, Rachel Rambach,
Kimberly Senna Moore,
and Michelle Erfurt.
We are three board-certified music therapists who are passionate about our work and feel we have something to say. Join us each month as we share stories, tips, and ideas about music therapy and working as a music therapist. Thank you for joining us.
So how are you both doing?
I am very sad today. It's my last day of summer. But I'm excited because I'm going to have an intern this year, so that'll be something new and different.
Yay! Do you know who yet?
Yes, I do. Her name is Karen. She is actually a doctoral student in the psychology program at ISU. But yeah, she finished her music therapy coursework, I think it was last year, and she's just been looking for an internship that will work with her schedule. And I was really flexible, and I said, hey, you know what? However much you can make it during the week, that's what we'll do, and we'll make it work.
That is fabulous. So is she going to be working it off through your private practice too, or is this just through the Hope Institute?
It's mainly going to be through Hope, but, you know, if we get down to crunch time and she still needs some more hours, we may do some things through my private practice too. So we'll just kind of play it by ear.
That is great. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
I think you'll enjoy it because what it'll do is really challenge you to analyze how and why you do certain things.
Right. I think it will too. And even
hone your skills.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm really looking forward to, is just kind of like looking at it from another perspective and really saying, okay, why do I do this? And, you know, what makes things work this way as opposed to another? And it'll be good.
And how are you, Michelle?
Busy with work, and that's great, and trying to figure out this table stuff. The coolest thing, a couple of people signed up for it. Janice Harris signed up for it, the radio show. And she wants to tape the show at the table.
Oh, that's cool.
Wait, who is that again?
Janice Harris with the music.
Yeah, nice.
She's like, are you going to have internet? Because can I tape the show from the table? I'm like, we will figure it out.
Very cool.
I know.
You should try to, I don't know what she has in mind, but if possible, you know, let the merchants know and they can all come over and kind of, you know, have a 2-minute blurb about.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Music therapy is a unique field because not only are we trained and certified therapists, but we are also skilled musicians. After all, what would music therapy be without the music? In addition to keeping up our therapeutic skills, business savvy, and advocacy work, we must also keep up our musicianship. Each of us has our own way of doing so, depending on our primary instrument and mode of professional practice. So in this month's episode, we'll be revealing our own approaches to maintaining and strengthening our musical skills. So I guess we should add that not only will we be talking about our own musical skills, but we're also going to be adding some input that we received via Twitter and Facebook.
We put out the question on Facebook and Twitter and got a lot of people, probably a dozen or so, who had something to share. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, listeners. So let's start with the obvious question, and that is, what are our primary instruments and do we use them in our own music therapy work? Michelle, do you want to get started?
Sure. My primary instrument was the violin, and I do not use it in my music therapy work. I did once back in the days when I used to work for a residential facility with adults diagnosed with developmental delays. I had a couple of sessions with folks who their goals were more based on receiving different stimulation and visual and auditory stimulation. And, you know, success was measured on whether people gave eye contact and or tolerated touch. So I did play violin for them. And it was awesome, actually, because everyone just perked up. And I think it had to do with hearing a different sound than was usually happening in our sessions. But I don't really use it a lot now in hospice work, mostly because, truthfully, it's just something else to carry. Right. And I don't always have the same clients all the time. So I'm not even sure if using that instrument is something that would help them in their particular goals. If I'm working with someone whose goals would be reminiscence or life review, I'm not sure that a violin song, you know, a classical piece would fit unless they like classical music. And so the guitar, what I usually use with hospice folks, provides me more flexibility depending on what their interests, musical interests are, so I can tailor to the patient more. Mm-hmm. Kimberly, what's your primary instrument?
Well, flute. And like you, Michelle, I don't use it in my music therapy work. But that said, I would also say that I took piano for 10 years and I've been singing my entire life. And those two instruments I definitely use in music therapy. They just weren't my major instruments in college. So I think the primary reason I don't use my flute in music therapy is because my voice is such, it's definitely a primary focus. That's not even the right word. But it's my primary tool in therapy, whether I'm using it to sing or talk or whatever, and the flute hinders that. Plus, I've done a lot of work with kids, and I don't really want my $5,000 flute around a bunch of kids.
Ditto.
So, let's admit, let's be realistic here. Now, Rachel, I think your primary instrument is your voice, right?
That's right. It is, and obviously I do use it every day in my music therapy work, but I use it in a completely different way than I did when I was studying it. In college, I was an opera singer and, you know, a high soprano. And now, about 6 or 7 years later, I'm definitely not a high soprano anymore. And I think that's because of the way that I sing now. And like you, Kimberly, I work with kids and it just doesn't fit into the goals that I'm working with and even just the kind of music that they would enjoy and that they would find motivating. So I do use my voice, but in a very different way than I started out doing so.
Right. So, Michelle, I have a question for you. Do you still find opportunities to play your violin and or perform, or do you still play?
No. I love the instrument. I just haven't gotten back into it, and I really haven't played since school. I don't know. I think I had some sort of weirdo emotional problem with it. I don't know. I just like guitar so much better. Like, I find that I'm more attracted to other instruments anyway, if you can be attracted and, you know, to other instruments. And I mean that in a romantic sense, totally. When I think, you know, oh, I feel like playing something, I think of using guitar or piano instead of violin.
Really?
And I think part of that is because I like songs with words.
Mm-hmm.
I like singing along and I find meaning with the words, and that's what I want to express. And so I find that my heart and my thoughts aren't going to playing the violin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the violin isn't really an accompaniment instrument, so that makes total sense. Now, did playing the violin and having that experience, did that help you when you started playing the guitar?
I think so, yes and no. I noticed that, you know, in guitar class in college, I picked it up a lot faster mm-hmm. than the other students, and I know that that's because of my string background, but I think it's more like my head understood how the guitar worked.
Right.
Because of violin, because you still use your fingers differently, you hold it differently, you use both hands differently. But I think theory-wise, it helped a lot.
I found that in college, learning the guitar actually helped me as an instrumentalist in general, or as a musician in general, because all of a sudden, instead of just thinking, you know, horizontally, I mean, I'm a flute player and a singer, and we have a lot of melodies, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was used to, okay, single line, just going straight across. And yes, I played piano as well, but I quit taking lessons when I was 17 and hadn't really matured that much as a musician. So then all of a sudden I'm learning guitar and I'm having to think in chords.
Right.
And that just completely changed how I viewed, you know, all my music and just that understanding, I think, enhanced me as a musician. So in some ways, I think I am better than I was 10 years ago. I may not have the finesse, but in terms of the depth of musicianship, there's a big difference, I feel.
Yeah, I definitely know what you're talking about. And when I started playing the guitar for that same reason, just because I had always thought so linear as far as the melody, but just all of the different possibilities with the guitar and so many different ways to play it, it was really overwhelming at first. But now it's kind of cool to explore and to find out different ways to accompany myself.
Now, Rachel, did you grow up playing piano too?
I did. Yeah, I started taking lessons when I was 5. And okay. I took lessons all the way through high school on a regular basis. And then I took a couple semesters of it in college too. But I never considered myself a pianist. I mean, I played for fun and I enjoyed it, but definitely my focus was on singing.
Well, this is going to sound completely horrible, so I'll say it anyway.
Okay.
Because I didn't learn to keep my mouth shut. But when everyone is naming their instruments, I can't help but think of all the orchestra jokes and the instrument jokes. You know, like violin players are snobby. And
like, that are I know what you mean.
I do too.
And I remember my vocal friends who only sang, they had a really hard time learning any instrument, anything that involved hands. But I doesn't sound like you encountered that.
No, and I think playing the piano and growing up with that helped a lot. But I know exactly what you mean because I was a voice major and most of my friends were voice majors in college. And so I did see that a little bit, especially even like with piano and taking like keyboard theory and harmony. I mean, they even struggled with that, which luckily I didn't. So I kind of felt like I had a leg up because of that piano background.
Remember the poor percussion majors and sight singing time?
Oh, gosh. Oh. Yeah. That was my favorite. I loved that.
All right. So what do y'all do now to keep up, you know, or as you said, Rachel, in the introduction, to maintain and strengthen your musical skills?
Michelle, do you want to start?
Yeah. Well, when we're all talking about musical skills, I'm thinking of in the session because, I don't know, that's just where my mind is going. So for my session musical skills, I'm always thinking of how do I keep up voice and guitar and rhythm instrument playing because those are the primary vehicles I'm using.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I keep up those skills by trying to challenge myself with every song I sing. Every song I learn from my clients, you know, when they make requests, to really go home and learn them and try to learn them the real way. Like, I try not to water down patterns anymore. I try not to water down chord structure anymore and really play the song like it was played by the original writer.
Mm-hmm.
So really doing all the bar chords, all the picking patterns.
Wow. And I water down still.
In a session? Are you kidding me?
I mean, I half and half things, but there are just some songs I'm like, you know what? I need to learn this the real way. You know, yeah. I need to, or else I'll never grow.
Right.
Because I sing the same songs over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm singing a lot of Frank Sinatra and a lot of jazz and big band stuff that has a lot of unique, you know, sevens and different right. chords that I really should do. I really should do all of them.
Yeah, and I definitely see that from your perspective, Michelle, because you're doing songs that people know the way that they were originally written and recorded. Whereas for me, and probably you too, Kimberly, we're singing songs that are either we've written ourselves or, you know, that were written by other music therapists or children's musicians that are lend themselves more easily to being adapted.
That's true. Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. My only hesitation is I'm also thinking of the hospital work I did, where I was singing songs that people knew really well.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, I mean, I generally had just, I just had a songbook and I knew all the songs in that book. And sometimes I would kind of joke, like if I was singing a Willie Nelson song, I just make a little joke saying, oh, well, you know, I think you'll recognize this song. I look a little different and sound a little different than the original person, but I think you'll know this song. And so I'd turn it kind of into my own because I can't sound like Willie Nelson and I can't sound like X, Y, and Z.
Right.
You know, but it still stimulated a lot of the same memories and emotions and got the job done, so to speak.
Sure.
Yeah. What about you, Rachel? How do you, I mean, I know you're a very active performer.
Yeah, I really want to hear this one. I really do.
Well,
Rachel, that's really
pressure.
What I want.
As far as performing, it's definitely in a different genre than I do any of my music therapy work. As far as music therapy, I work mostly with children and either in my private practice or a school setting. So I tend to stick more with music that's appropriate for younger children, obviously. So when you do that for many, many hours a day, as I do, you need some contrast to that. So that's why I started performing and why I enjoy singing, you know, in the pop and singer-songwriter vein and just kind of writing for myself in that style too. And I think it keeps up my guitar playing skills and even my songwriting skills, because once you start cranking out kids' songs the way that I do, you kind of get into this pattern and into this mindset, so it's good to break that habit every once in a while.
Really, how do you maintain and strengthen your musical skills?
So I try to perform whenever I can, which at this point isn't that often with two young kids and having just moved, especially, and things like that. But even if it's just a couple times a year at a church, or here in town, there's a community band that I really want to get involved in. So I try to make those opportunities that force myself to, okay, I've got to learn this piece now. You know, mm-hmm. I have to play. So that's something that has worked pretty well. I'm also trying to, you know, I'm in a new house. We have new things here. I'm trying to develop new habits. And one thing I'm trying really hard to do is just to play every day. Even if it's 20 minutes, you know, even if it's not for very long, you know, maybe it's flute one day, or we finally just got our piano yesterday, which I'm so excited about. So yeah. I'm trying to just play and make music every day, turn that into a habit. And that's really it. I mean, right now I don't, you know, have many opportunities to learn new skills. I'm not seeing any clients at this point. So it's just making music for myself and for my kids and for our family, just for fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tried. Oh, sorry.
I'm done.
Okay. Well, I actually tried something new this summer just because I felt like I was kind of getting in a rut as far as my guitar playing. You know, once you kind of establish your style and the way that you accompany yourself, you kind of stick to that. And I wanted to get out of that a little bit. So I've been doing some guitar coaching this summer. I found this guy that is an awesome guitarist. He's in a couple of different bands here in Springfield. And he's been coming over, you know, maybe twice, three times a month. And we just work on different accompaniment patterns, different finger picking things, just to kind of expand how I do things and just my skills, which has been really helpful.
So you're the student then?
Yeah, I'm the student. I'm switching roles.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been really fun. I've really been enjoying it. It's a lot of pressure, though, and I kind of remember that feeling that you get as a student. Oh, my gosh, I have this lesson today. I better practice. I better, mm-hmm. you know what I'm doing. So now I'm getting into the heads of my students. I'm like, okay, now I know, you know, what's going through their heads. But it's been really helpful just because it's been that extra motivating factor to get out of those habits that I've been in for so long and to get out of those patterns.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's interesting that you say that this puts you in the head of your student, because I noticed, you know, I gotta be really honest with you. You know, I'm loving our conversation, but it's kind of depressing me because now that I'm verbally saying, you know what, I don't really play anymore. I don't really play for myself. I haven't played violin since college, which is like 7 years ago. And it's kind of bumming me out. But, you know, when you talk about being the student, you know, I can see that I, just like what you said, Kim, I need things in front of me in order to play. I need to set a goal.
Right.
I need help. I need an outside source.
Yeah.
To help me do things because there's only so much I can initiate on my own. You know, we all need a coach or a mentor or a support system or whatever you want to call it to get your pushy in gear, you know?
Absolutely. And that's why I went ahead with the guitar coach this summer because, you know, could I have sat down with some YouTube videos and learned some new guitar skills? Sure, I could have, but what's going to motivate me to take an hour out of my day to do that? You know, you need that outside motivating factor to say, okay, this is, you know, what I'm working towards and I have this person that expects me to do it. So that's why I'm going to do it.
And actually you're reminding me like a couple years ago when I was in Orlando, but now we're not in Orlando. I used to be involved in my church's handbell choir, which I loved. And the thing that I liked about it so much was that it was just an hour or two a week. And I got to be musical. I got to read music again because it had been a while since I had read music to be a musician instead of to be a vehicle. Like in sessions, I think of my role, the music's role is to be the music is the character and I'm just the vessel sort of thing. But in bell choir, I was like, yeah, I get to make music and be a part of this group and play with other people, but I don't have to be in charge and I don't have to make any decisions. I just get to do what the paper's telling me to do.
Right.
And you're reminding me that I think I miss that.
Well, there you go.
Maybe I should get into that again.
I think you should.
Well, and that gets me thinking too, because it reminded me too, I spent my first 3 years as a music therapist. I also worked at my church as the children's music director. And I absolutely loved it, but it was also definitely a mind shift of, you know, using music, trying to perfect it for performing versus, I mean, like you said, Michelle, I use music totally differently in music therapy. So that to me kind of begs the question, do you think it's important to keep up the musician in you if you're a music therapist? In terms of keeping up the performing and enhancing your musical skills and things like that? Or do you think you can get the same results just working on, and I don't really mean just, but working on your music therapy skills and improving those? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think you're right. You do need to keep up your performing skills because that's going to translate to a better therapeutic experience for your client. I just think that there are so many benefits to it. I feel like because I perform outside of just doing music therapy and because I'm, you know, kind of expanding the different modes in which I perform, that it really does help me when I get back into a session.
Nice. What about you, Michelle? What do you think?
I think once you include playing outside of the session and being a musician, that will definitely make you a more well-rounded music therapist and or even just a well-rounded person because you're giving yourself another experience.
Absolutely.
To go through. So that's going to add to your personality and your whole self. And I don't know. I think that there's nothing wrong with not playing outside of a session if you don't want to. I just don't think you should do things that you don't want to do.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all. And a lot of us don't, but
right.
I think you should look into it because it's a different sense of awareness that you're going to have of yourself.
Yeah, it really is. And that kind of reminded me of, as far as the performing that I do now, you know, before when I was in college and I was performing, you know, classical pieces and opera pieces and that kind of thing, it's very much you walk to the front of the stage, you do your piece, and then you walk up the stage. Now, when I'm more in the singer-songwriter avenue, it's, you know, me with my guitar with a microphone in front of an audience that, you know, wants to hear my music but also wants to get a little bit of my personality as well. So I'm not just singing and then leaving the stage. I'm talking with the audience and getting their feedback. And, you know, it's almost like a music therapy session in that sense, because I'm interacting with the audience and I'm kind of playing off of their cues as to, okay, which song am I going to do next? You know, what am I going to choose to do now? Because I see that they're reacting in this way. So it really is helpful, you know, to step away from that and to walk into a classroom full of kids and staff members, you know, to just kind of use those interpersonal skills.
But I wonder, do you ever feel like music burnout? Do you ever have days where you just don't want to be around music?
Honestly, no, I don't. I think it's because I'm involved in so many different types of music and so many different ways of using it, not only just in a music therapy session, but then I come home and teach, you know, 5 piano lessons and 2 voice lessons and a guitar lesson. So I'm getting all of these different genres. You know, I'm teaching classical songs to my voice students. I'm teaching a pop song to a guitar student, and then doing more of the children's music in my music therapy sessions. I'm getting so much different music that it's not just one type that I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't take it anymore. So I think the variety helps a lot.
And I think it's also important in terms of finding those opportunities to simply make music. I mean, we came into this profession as musicians, so there's a big part of us that just loves music.
Exactly. And I think so many of us let the therapeutic aspect sometimes overshadow the fact that, hey, we're musicians and, you know, we need for that to show in our sessions. Otherwise, you know, other types of therapists, of course, they use music too, but, you know, we call ourselves music therapists for a reason.
Absolutely. So I'd love to take this opportunity now to share what you all said, and not you, Rachel, Michelle, but what the listeners said on Facebook and Twitter when we put out that question of how do you, what did we say? We said, what concerns or suggestions do you have about maintaining or improving your musical skills as a professional? So just going through some of these, Carolyn, and a lot of people liked Carolyn's suggestion here. She said that she and 3 other music therapists put together a jam band where they rotate instruments. And so 1 week it may be guitar and then keyboard, voice, hand drums, so that they can get more experience playing their non-major instruments and learning some new tunes.
I love that. When I saw that, I just thought, oh my gosh, that is the coolest thing.
Absolutely.
And actually, that took me back to my internship. One of the requirements of my internship was we had to learn an instrument that we didn't know before.
Uh-huh.
And so I chose drum set, and it was so fun. It was really hard, but it was fun.
Uh-huh.
And her saying that made me think of that. And it makes you, it really definitely makes you better well-rounded.
Yeah.
So then Mary Beth here is kind of validating some of what we've talked about. She says, practice, play, play, practice. Always nurture your inner musician. Find outlets and venues in which to perform. Keep yourself challenged, because the sharper your musical skills, the more bandwidth you have to use for clinical thinking.
Oh,
and I think
that
taps into exactly what you were saying, Rachel, about how it translates into your music therapy work.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You know, and I want to make a point here. Do you think, I wonder if music therapists, you know, we're all different shapes and sizes and family structure. Do music therapists with children or families still nurture their outside musician, or do they do that less than?
I can speak to that.
Because, you know, just looking at, you know, listening to what you said, Kim, and listening to what you said, Rachel, you guys have different family structures right now, different households.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Kimberly?
I mean, I think it very much depends on the person. I'm sure there are music therapists out there who are mothers and all who find more opportunities than I do. I remember hearing from a mother once, you know, 10 years ago when I was at Iowa, and she was working on her doctorate. And she said, you can do everything when you're a parent that you did before you had kids. It just takes you longer. And I absolutely agree with that. So, yes, I can perform and I can do those, you know, take lessons or teach lessons, but I may just not be able to do as much. as I did before.
And it kind of looks like how Rachel, like you do coffee shop shows. So that's mm-hmm. a couple hours. But and Kim, you're like, even in your conversation, you said, I pick one performance or whatever, one opportunity every once in a while. That's one song. Or does that sound right?
Absolutely right. Twice a year. If I can perform set, twice a year, that's a good year for me. So, going back to what our readers and listeners wrote, Justine, this one just made me laugh. She writes, chain myself to a piano.
That's good advice.
That's right. Pamela, who is our awesome assistant who transcribes our shows, she writes, I think there's something important about performing for others, and that's still something that I'm sort of nervous doing. I come up with all sorts of excuses not to do it. It seems like, and I thought this was very insightful, I felt, she writes, it seems like when we ask our clients to play in front or with us, we have to be really in tune with what we're asking them to do. So performing seems like a way to tap into that.
Oh, what a good point.
Mm-hmm. So if we're asking our clients to do things that are kind of scary and stretching them, shouldn't we also do that in turn?
Yeah, I like that. Good job, Pamela.
Faith, I'd like to add that exposing oneself to a variety of world, aka non-Western musical styles, can also be helpful for expanding how one thinks of music and the musical possibilities. It's fascinating to me how different cultures use music for communication and expression. And I think that it's important for music therapists to have some sort of exposure to these styles, especially if we work with clients from diverse multicultural backgrounds. Mm. Cool. All right. Kathleen, again, this is exactly what you were talking about, Rachel. Continuing to take lessons on guitar and or piano has been really helpful to me. It forces you to learn or stay competent in techniques that you may not use on a daily basis, but are handy to have them when you need them.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah. Gary, there are a couple more. I have a couple more. I don't know if y'all have anything.
I have a few to add.
Okay. Gary, he writes, wow, I have always enjoyed playing guitar, but now I can't play at all due to some health issues he has. But he does say, be forceful and share the gift at coffee shops, churches, anywhere you can, because there is always someone a little better than you, and you will be amazed at what you learn.
Oh, that is so true. That is so true. And actually, I was just performing a couple of weeks ago, and I met this guy that plays the guitar really, really, really well. And we kind of sat down and talked for a little bit, and he told me some things that he thought I could do to spice up my music a little bit. And I thought, wow, you know, I would have never gotten this feedback or had this conversation had I not put myself out there and performed.
Nice. Yeah. Well, and I think also that speaks to, you know, the importance of being open to that possibility and that, you know, feedback. And
yes, there's always more to learn.
Exactly. And finally, Rochelle Wright, she says on Twitter, my focus has been on improving my skills in clinical improvisation and playing popular styles and expanding my song repertoire, which I think is something we are kind of always working on.
Oh, yeah.
Expanding our song repertoire.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Very good. Well, I have a couple to add. I'm looking at Twitter right now, and Wade, who I'll plug for his wonderful podcast, he does Time for Music, and it's a great podcast. You can get it on iTunes just like ours. Wade adds that he takes lessons in the summer on a new instrument sometimes and sets up jams with interns and music therapists when possible and plays for other departments, which I think is very cool, just to have that built-in network of people that you can perform for and get feedback from. And then he also shared that he has a concert tonight with the voice department, and he is playing, wow, the ukulele, guitar, harp, piano, bass guitar, and singing to accompany students. You go, Wade.
Oh, shame, Wade.
Wade rocks.
Wow. And then he added one more thing. He said that he buys one new instrument a year and tries to teach himself how to play it. And this summer, it's the concertina. That's cool.
That's an awesome idea.
That is very cool. And I actually did that last summer. I had never played the ukulele before. So I bought myself a ukulele and I kind of tooled around on it on my own last summer and picked it up again this summer. So that's been kind of fun.
Nice.
Very cool. Oh, and then also wanted to add, Natalie told me that singing and performing with groups is a great way to keep up those skills.
These are great. Thank you all so much for
yeah.
writing and sharing these ideas. It's not only, I don't know, I'm finding it a little inspiring and
me
I hope
too.
Other people do as well.
I know. I want to end this podcast and go practice music.
I do too. I'm all inspired now.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of inspiration, we would like to give a shout-out inspiration to this is the new gossip news line. If you like the Research Music Therapy blog, that's the name of it, right?
Music Therapy Research Blog.
Music Therapy Research Blog. It's now going to be podcast. Yay!
Awesome. That's awesome. So if you don't know, the Music Therapy Research Blog was started by Blythe Lagasse, who is a professor at Colorado State University. She is a fabulous music therapist, a fabulous businesswoman, a great professor. I just came from Fort Collins and have close ties to CSU. And she is doing implementing some innovative teaching programs and just has a lot of neat ideas, and I think the world of her. She's great. So she's doing this podcast with who again, Michelle?
With Andrew
Knight,
the North Dakota professor.
With Andrew Knight. Yes, he's a professor at North Dakota. Also just a sharp tack. He is so cool. He makes me laugh every time we chat or talk. He just joined Twitter about a week ago. So it's been nice to have him on board. So I'm excited to hear their podcast.
Me too. Yeah. And it'll be a nice contrast to ours because we don't really focus on research at all. So you can get, the things that we're talking about on one side and then get all the research stuff from their podcast.
We're the yin and they're the yang.
Exactly. Thank you for joining us. To read a transcript of the show, go to www.musictherapyroundtable.com, where you will also find links to each of our personal blogs. You can also get podcast episodes sent directly to you by subscribing to the Music Therapy Roundtable podcast through iTunes. Send comments and questions to musictherapyroundtable@gmail.com. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll talk again next month.